Hello, this is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 9th of September, 2016. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Jane Thomas and Valerie Lilly. And your readers today are John Regan.
Hello.
Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
And Brian Woodruff.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Tom Williams. The main headlines this week are: Leader suspends rebel councillor, Chiefs drawing up transport strategy, and first female dean at cathedral appointed. So may we have the story behind the first headline, please, John?
Some local drama here to start, Tom. Leader suspends rebel councillor. The rebel city councillor who scuppered the Silver Hill scheme in Winchester has been suspended from the new body tasked with coming up with new ideas. Kim Gottlieb has been relieved of membership of the Central Winchester Regeneration Group by council leader Stephen Godfrey, following complaints from senior city council officers and the outgoing chief executive Simon Eden. The Chronicle has seen several emails, including a hard-hitting one from Mr. Eden, who retires this week, strongly criticising Mr. Gottlieb. Mr. Eden wrote that Mr. Gottlieb had privately discussed a new leisure centre with Wilmot Dixon, who are contractors, and with a private company to repair Friars Gate multi-storey car park, allegedly outside the rules. Mr. Eden further said that Mr. Gottlieb, in emails to members of the planning committee, seeks to, quotes, directly undermine the advice of the council's own professional advisers, close quotes. Mr. Eden cited recent comments in Estate Gazette magazine, and he says, quite apart from the direct reputational damage to the organisation and the city, this is also a very public attempt to undermine the credibility of those of our staff working in this area in a journal read by many fellow professionals. As such, Mr. Gottlieb's actions are completely unacceptable. He goes on to say, the catalogue of behaviour I outline above is both out of keeping with the conduct we should expect of an elected member and also beyond that which we should expect our officers to tolerate. He says, by his repeated actions, Councillor Gottlieb has made it acceptable for others to publicly criticise and even to be personally offensive towards council officers in their roles as public servants. Witness, for example, many of the letters to the Chronicle or presentations to Cabinet in recent months. In my view, this represents a new low in the conduct of political debate in Winchester. It's absolutely vital that there exists trust between officers and members. He goes on, there must also be a mutual respect for each other's role and professionalism. Without that, the council simply cannot function. And in my view, we've reached a point where that trust and mutual respect does not exist with regard to Councillor Gottlieb. I and my senior colleagues no longer find it possible to be asked to work with him, as long as his bullying behaviour towards us and our colleagues continues. And from there, the chief executive goes on to ask Councillor Gottlieb to apologise. Mr. Gottlieb, whose self-financed legal action led to the High Court finding that the council has acted unlawfully over the procurement of the £150 million Silver Hill scheme, has indeed been critical of senior members of the City Council and has previously called for Mr. Eden to resign. Following his suspension, in an email that he sent to Councillor Godfrey, Councillor Gottlieb said, you cannot act as accuser, judge and jury, and I question your right to obstruct me acting as an elected councillor or to permit any officer not to deal with me. Asked whether he would accede to Mr. Eden's calls for him to apologise, Mr. Gottlieb said, I've got nothing to apologise for. Mr. Eden, speaking to the Chronicle on his last day at work before retiring, denied that this was a parting shot to settle a score. He says, no, there's genuine concern on behalf of my staff. I have a duty to report to the leader of the council, whether it's the day before I leave, the month before, or whenever. Councillor Gottlieb says, I'm the one who feels bullied. If you saw all the correspondence, I'm the one who's constantly harried and bullied. This is the pot calling the kettle black. It's all rubbish. Not being involved in the first meeting of the Central Winchester Regeneration Group on September the 13th is going to be a huge disappointment. The idea that I criticise the officers is nonsense. We had good ideas coming forward, and this is just another opportunity missed. Complaints against Councillor Gottlieb are being investigated. But Councillor Godfrey said, this email from Mr. Eden was one of many reports I've received over the last few weeks, including from other councillors, which required me to take action which I had hoped to avoid. He said that he'd previously gained credit by appointing Councillor Gottlieb to chair the Central Winchester Regeneration Group, and he said, so I'm reluctant to lose any such credit, but unfortunately, as the situation is, I have a duty of care to officers and councillors, and so I decided to suspend Kim. Councillor Godfrey said officers were feeling, quote, sensitive, and the consequence of that being that they find it difficult to respond to Councillor Gottlieb in a professional manner. I need to ensure the council can operate effectively in the future without bringing about unavoidable incidents.
And now, Chief's drawing up transport strategy. Radical changes to Winchester's traffic system may be afoot as civic chiefs draw up a new transport strategy. An end to the notorious one-way system would be considered if the evidence supports the change, said the City Council Traffic Supremo, James Burns. He said he approached the issue with no preconceptions. Councillor Burns, portfolio holder for Transport and Professional Services, said, it is looking fundamentally at traffic movement. If the evidence concludes we need fundamental changes to the one-way system, then I don't rule out any possible solution if it is the right one. The joint study by the City and County Councils will look at all aspects, such as congestion, air pollution, and access for pedestrians, cyclists, and drivers. Transport has been a contentious issue in the city for decades. A parking survey has just been concluded, and Councillor Burns will be analysing the results. There have been recent clashes between environmental campaigners who say traffic should be discouraged by reducing city centre parking, a council policy for 20 years, and business leaders who argue that reducing parking is damaging city shops. Several car parks have closed, such as Chesil Street and Friars Gate Multi-Story. Upper Brook Street is soon to follow for the new doctor's surgery. Last month, the council planners voted to partially reopen Friars Gate for eventually 50 spaces. Councillor Burns said, the views of the business community are just as important as the views of residents of Central Winchester. Parking is vital to keep the local economy ticking along. There is a balance to be found. Simply moving the parking out is too simplistic. It may have worked in the past. It is right that we look again and challenge those assumptions. I have no problems having that debate with Chris Gillam of Friends of the Earth or Phil Gagg. Pollution in the city centre is amongst the worst in the county, with high levels of pollutants breaching legal limits. Mr. Gillam said, we are moving backwards. Over Friars Gate, Councillor Burns was pretty clear, where he seemed to be parroting the BID talk about the nonsense of air pollution being a function of not enough car parking. The idea that car parks are full, so people are circulating looking for spaces. If you add more parking, the same thing happens again, but at a higher level of traffic. The more car parking, the more traffic, and the more pollution. Pollution is killing people. The study is expected to take about 12 months, with a public consultation at the end. Meanwhile, a new group to consider transport issues across the district is being set up by Winchester City Council. The Winchester District Transport Board will be led by key councillors and officers. The council hopes that public transport providers, transport policy makers, and other interest groups will form part of this new board. Councillor Frank Pearson, portfolio holder for Environment, Health and Wellbeing, said, "Transport is very important to the council and it has direct links to other issues we want to address, such as air quality, encouraging walking and cycling, and improving the public realm."
First female dean at Cathedral appointed. She has been appointed as the first ever female dean of Winchester Cathedral. The Very Reverend Catherine Ogle, 55, says she wants to strengthen links between the city and the diocese. Her appointment last week at the famous cathedral follows months of searching for a replacement of the recently retired Very Reverend James Atwell. Catherine is to take up her position next February, as she is currently serving as Dean of Birmingham, a position she's held since 2010. Over the course of the last 6 years, Catherine has led Birmingham's St Philip's Cathedral through the celebration of its 300th anniversary, overseeing major restoration works and leading fundraising efforts for major projects. However, she told the Chronicle that moving to Winchester is a new step in her journey. "I've loved being in Birmingham, but I feel very honoured to take up the role at one of the oldest and finest cathedrals in the country," added the newly appointed dean. "I cannot take on a new role unless I genuinely believe that God is calling me to do it. I feel that is happening here. I'll be coming down to Winchester between now and February. I'm really keen to get to know the wider area. One of the things I'm really interested in doing is building a stronger connection between the city, the district, and the diocese." Asked about the difference between the two cities, Catherine added, "Birmingham is so high with lots of tall buildings, but Winchester is so lovely because you can see the sky. The cathedral in Birmingham is quite new, only 300 years old, and so is rather warm inside. However, Winchester is cold, which was a surprise to me, so I have to find cardigan and some long johns." The new dean was appointed by a specialist panel, including representatives from other cathedrals, dioceses and chapters. It was headed by Vice Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Lindsay Foggs. Her appointment was then confirmed by the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, the Prime Minister's Office, and the Queen. The Reverend Canon Dr. Roland Ream, Acting Dean of Winchester, said, "We are delighted that Catherine brings so much outward-looking energy to one of England's oldest and finest cathedrals, as well as an evident concern for people. We welcome her leadership and wisdom at this time of extraordinary growth and potential." The Right Reverend Tim Dakin, Bishop of Winchester, added, "As Dean of Birmingham, Catherine has led the cathedral with great wisdom, engaging with various challenges and repeatedly showing what a capable and effective leader she is. Her appointment as Dean of Winchester is an excellent one for the cathedral, for the city, and for the diocese more broadly. Catherine's focus and passion for the mission makes her an ideal fit at a time when we are beginning to make Winchester a more mission-shaped diocese. I'm delighted by her appointment. Catherine will enrich cathedral life with her many gifts, and I look forward to working closely with her." And there are three photographs with this. One, a nice photo of her on her own, another one with the bishop, and a third of the people watching to see her made dean.
And that concludes the headlines. And now we continue with the obituary notices. The following deaths have been announced. Butler, Melvin Butler, peacefully aged 84. Farrant, William Farrant, at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 94. Futrell, Lorna Mary Futrell, peacefully at the Dower House, Winchester, aged 95. Graham, Dorothy Graham, aged 83. Hunt, Frederick William Hunt peacefully at Old Alresford Cottage, aged 84. Ward, Iris Ward, at Ridgemead Care Home, aged 97. Watts, Sheila Maureen Watts, peacefully, aged 79. Williams, Michael Stafford Williams, at St Catherine's View, Winchester, aged 86. And Wilson, the Reverend Bill Wilson, peacefully at Berwick Court, aged 90. There's no Christian comment in the Chronicle this week, so we go straight on to the letters. And the first letter is read by John.
Yes, here's an impassioned plea from Paul Williams of Worthy Lane in Winchester, and he headlines his letter rather, "We should help." Sir, Winchester voted to remain in the European Union, and I was proud to be one of our contingent taking that spirit to the March for Europe on Saturday, September the 3rd. This was an international gathering for peace and cooperation with people from all over the UK and Europe walking together and sharing the need to work in unity to solve problems that affect the whole continent and not just us as individual countries. In many European countries, concern about immigration is fueling the rise of right-wing parties. The 20th century showed us the depth that so-called civilised societies can plumb if demonisation of the, quote, others is allowed to prevail. Britain is now the second largest arms exporter in the world after the USA. And since 2010, two-thirds of these exports have gone to the Middle East, from where the largest outflows of refugees are taking place. And yet, Britain seems unwilling to accept full responsibility for its actions by helping to resettle migrants displaced by these conflicts, rather than condemning them to a life on hold in inadequate camps, often not even a safe distance from conflict zones. How can we demand that our European partners address these issues while we hide snugly behind our channel moat? The European project was founded to prevent wars in Europe, laying waste to generation after generation, and not just to increase economic output. For this reason, for all its imperfections, staying inside the EU, supporting it and changing it from within, has to be the right thing to do. Britain gaining economically at the expense of others while losing its moral compass is not what anyone voted for.
And this one comes from Keith Webb. Sir, once again, our county council chiefs have displayed ignorance of reality after an expensive and extensive survey of waste recycling centres. They claim proposed changes will save ratepayers £1 million per year, but utterly fail to consider the consequences. First, the proposal to charge £10 per sheet of plasterboard ignores two realities. The first, that hardly anyone dumps a complete sheet of plasterboard, and that what is dumped is 99% bits and pieces. Second, by charging for this service, the consequence will be more fly tipping, and they have failed to work out just how difficult and expensive collecting wet plasterboard from hedgerows will be. Several lorries and crews will be required at a cost of many thousands of pounds per annum. Third, by cutting hours and closing on Thursdays, all they achieve is a saving in wages of some of the hard-working and helpful staff who may well decide to work elsewhere. Today, I check the cost of hiring a skip dedicated to plasterboard, and it costs £222 per tonne plus VAT, which no doubt HCC could claim back. What will it cost in wages to have someone whose sole job it is to collect £10 from everyone dumping plasterboard? Probably at least that, each week at each site, 20 sites. This will cost £230,880 per annum at least. Surely, the best answer is to keep existing opening hours and make a very small charge per visit, say 50 pence, and to have a money-operated barrier at each site. This avoids the requirement of having someone collecting money and watching over the plasterboard skips. If enough money is not raised, this charge could easily be increased. If the County Council really wants to save significant sums of money, then they should look hard at senior council employees' wage and pension costs. What possible justification can there be for the number of staff earning over £100,000 per annum, and some even more than the Prime Minister? Our recycling centres do a wonderful job and should be kept going as they are. And that comes from Keith Webb, Quarry Road, Winchester.
This letter is entitled Fascinating Play. Sir, your stimulating article, Elderly Inspire Original Play, persuaded us on Sunday afternoon to attend what we thought would be a performance. Oh no. We found ourselves instead at a tea party where six members of Flintlock Theatre under the aegis of the Hat Fair created an innovative piece of theatre based on recent interviews with six 90-plus-year-old Winchester residents. The actors, a third of the age of the interviewed nonagenarians, spoke their actual words precisely, telling a shared story of six lives lived over nine decades from their earliest childhood through to their current venerable ages and of extraordinary events that they experienced, war and its aftermath, cultural, social, technological change. They describe personal hardships and poverty lives blighted by separation, lack of equality in education, women's rights, the trauma of coping with a partner's dementia and with bereavement. They talk about now, often scornful of social media and its effect especially on children. They even had strong opinions to share about Brexit. The whole experience for the audiences at that time, at their nine performances in 3 days at various venues, was moving, informative, and often funny. What shone through was the energy and awareness of these 90-year-olds. They have so much to share with the young people at a tea party. What a pity there weren't more there. They were fascinating. Could not the production be taken into schools and colleges? It has such a strong cross-generational message. Thank you, Winchester City Council, for sponsoring this innovative and stimulating venture. Money well spent. And that's from Ira and Alan Parry-Jones of Gordon Road, Winchester.
Transport investment needed now. Sir, yes, Winchester urgently needs a new transport strategy, as reported in the Chronicle on September the 1st. And indeed, it has long needed such a strategy. The concern now is how and who to carry out the review and to put forward the strategy. For, with all the cutbacks of the last few years, the resources can clearly not be there in either Hampshire County Council or Winchester City Council to tackle such an immense and absolutely vital additional task. Nor indeed can there be the requisite expertise or experience. So, are the councils putting together a brief for external consultants to tender? Do they have a list of such organisations that specialise in the problems of polluted cathedral cities like Winchester? There can be no more important investment right now, for without the strategy, how can any progress be made on any of the mega issues facing Winchester, like a city centre master plan or station approach business area? And that comes from Julian English, who lives in Courtney Road in Winchester.
And the next letter comes from Mr. S. Stadden, and it's headed Retract Comment. Sir, for Adam Nicholas to compare the Boomtown Festival to the horror that prisoners of war suffered at the hands of the Japanese during the Second World War in the building of the Burma Railway is beyond contempt. And that was in letters September the 1st. I call for him to retract that statement and apologise immediately. The fact he even made such a comparison shows what an ignorant, uneducated person he is. May I suggest, instead of spending his time whining about things that actually have no bearing on his life, If you don't agree with it, don't attend. It's that simple. He brushes up on his history and finds out about the meaning of the Burma Railway and the reason for the whole Second World War in general. And with regards to making a profit from Boomtown, if we are to follow his advice, then every festival in the country should be banned. That comes from Mr. S. Staddon, Rees Road, Worthy Down.
And Jenny Stables writes about damage of cars. Sir, there are restrictions on the lighting of bonfires and there are restrictions on where you can smoke, as both these things can cause nuisance and damage to health. But drivers can drive all day and every day if they want, poisoning the air for everyone else and themselves. Perhaps it's time for driving to be considered antisocial and for people to ask themselves whether their journey is really necessary. And that's from Jenny Stables, Gordon Avenue, Highcliffe.
And in this letter, Roy Hodgson wants to offer thanks. Thanks for care. Sir, I'd like to say through your column how grateful our family is for the love and care our mother Mary Hodgson had in Berwick Court Nursing Home. She was there for 5 months, and she was the happiest she'd been for a while. Nursing gets a bad press, but this one we could not fault. So thank you, Berwick Court, and all the staff. And Roy lives in Nuns Walk, Hyde, in Winchester.
And now a short letter from Tom Smith. Sir, Paul Wilde did indeed suffer a, quote, biblical punishment, close quotes, over his pathetic thievery in the cathedral, as reported in the Chronicle on September the 1st. But am I alone in wondering why the police officer who saw him crawling towards the taxi rank afterwards did not think to ask him one or two questions? He thought Wilde was drunk, but would that not be drunk and incapable, which I believe is still a criminal offence? That comes from Tom Smith, Romsey Road, Winchester.
And Daphne E. Smith writes about plastic packaging. Sir, in 1949, plastic food bags were delivered to each house in Cheriton, and I assume to the rest of the country, and so we entered the plastic era. We were impressed with them and washed and reused them. Today, almost everything we buy is encased in it, and brown paper and string packaging is a thing of the past. We used to burn waste paper. Small pieces were thrown onto the open fire. Most of us had to heat our homes, and larger rubbish was disposed of on bonfires in the garden. Plastic is disposable but not destructible, so we're going to need more and more landfill sites as the years pass. Even worse, animals are dying as a result of swallowing plastic bags as they forage. Recently it was found that the whales washed up on our shores perished in this manner. It's nice to see the return of the traditional shopping bag to replace the plastic carriers, and although they cost more than the 5 pence, they will certainly work out cheaper in the long run, for they can last for years. However, most of us still using kitchen bin liners, black dustbin-sized lid roof refuse ones, and more goods in the food chain are packed to add to the large amount we already throw out. I doubt we can turn the clock back, but perhaps the boffins should concentrate on finding a way to make plastic destructible. I wonder if anyone can remember when paper carrier bags had string handles which almost cut off the circulation to our fingers if we overloaded them. Today we suffer broken fingernails and sometimes have to resort to scissors to fight our way out into the package, and this doesn't do a lot for our tempers. And that's from Daphne E. Smith of the Pastures, Cheriton.
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, excuse me, you can telephone 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now, looking back, we begin with news from 200 years ago, and the first piece is read by John. Thank you, John.
Yes, September the 9th, 1816. Headed, Skipper Shot at Wheel. We've been favoured with an account of the death of Mr. Partridge on board the Nancy by a gentleman who was an eyewitness to it. He says, at 8:30 on Saturday evening, the 18th of August, being at tea in the cabin, we heard the man on deck hail a fishing boat, telling her to luff. Immediately we heard a noise, and going on deck, we saw a boat nearly ahead, and the persons on board it firing directly at us. Thinking it dangerous to remain on deck, we all went below, leaving Mr. Partridge at the helm. Immediately afterwards, they boarded us and fired a volley and mortally wounded Mr. Partridge. And this account ends there, which is kind of frustrating because I wanted to know what happened next, really. Second piece is headed Volcanic Winds, and it's also from 1816. It's the general opinion of the scientific men that the extraordinary gale of wind from the north on Saturday night was occasioned by some dreadful volcanic explosion in the south, which, by the rarefaction of the atmosphere, occasioned the torrent of air to fill up the vacuum. A very short time will prove the truth or falsehood of this supposition, but certainly it was, under the circumstances of violence, rapidity and shortness of duration, a most extraordinary phenomenon. The earthquake in Scotland, meanwhile, has been attributed to an explosion of some submarine volcanoes in the northern seas, and it's been observed that in all parts of the earth, volcanic eruptions are becoming more frequent than therefore.
And now 100 years ago, from September the 9th, 1916, and it's more tragedy, I'm afraid. What appeared to be a very sad domestic tragedy occurred at Headley on Friday afternoon of last week. A threshing machine engine driver named James Smith is alleged to have shot his wife with a revolver, inflicting such injuries that she died in Alton Infirmary on Monday morning. The man, it is stated, turned the weapon on himself, but failed to inflict a mortal wound, and he is now said to be recovering. The husband and wife had been separated for some time, and the wife had taken a situation as a housekeeper for a man in Headley, but the husband did not approve of this and tried repeatedly to get his wife to come back. He, it is stated, went again to make another attempt, but this time drew a revolver. He fired at her, with the bullet entering her neck. And the second item, not quite as tragic, but still rather sad. On Sunday night, soon after 10 o'clock, just as everybody was comfortably in bed in Otterbourne, there came knocks at various doors with calls for help. Several people were soon in the road, more or less dressed, when it was found that a soldier, a sergeant in the Somersets, had been thrown from the bicycle just by the church. He was picked up and carried into the White Horse, where he received careful attention from the landlord. He was rather badly cut above the head, and a few teeth were knocked out. Just after midnight, an ambulance arrived to fetch him.
And two items from 50 years ago on September 10th, 1966. First one says, Trio's Lucky Escape. Three men working at Park Hill, Micheldever, had a lucky escape on Wednesday morning when the jib of a crane touched a high-voltage cable carrying 11,000 volts. Two men in the cab and one holding a girder, the crane was moving, managed to get clear unhurt. As the jib of the crane remained in contact with the cable, the crane stayed alive, and it wasn't possible to stop the engine until the SEB arrived to cut off the power. Firemen were called to the scene because of sparks being thrown out at the point of contact. And the second item says, M3 Home Tearful Plea. There was an emotional moment during the London to Basingstoke M3 motorway inquiry meeting at Sandhurst on Friday when at Nately Skers a woman broke down in tears as she pleaded for her 76-year-old mother's bungalow to be spared from demolition. Mrs. P.L. Muir cried as she told the inspector, Sir John Evans, that only a year ago she received assurances that her mother's bungalow would not need to come down to make way for a motorway bridge. Another objector was Mrs. Muir's sister, Mrs. Irene Bushell. She said, "My mother's bungalow would serve her the rest of her life. It would cost a minimum of £2,500 to rehouse her. As the district valuer in our area is so tight on these things, as we've seen in the local press, we all realise she won't get the money to rehouse her. Only in 1965 were we told the bungalow would not be needed. Our MP also took it up and heard the same thing."
1991 now. Abandon M3 plan call. The chairman of the Twyford Down Association has called on the government to abandon its, quote, doomed plan for the extension of the M3 motorway through the Down. Mr. David Croker was commenting on the European Commission's confirmation that it will act over the UK's failure to comply with a 1988 directive which states that an environmental impact assessment must be made on all major projects before any decision is taken. Second piece is headed, "The Russians Are Coming." Plans for Moscow Ballet Company's first British tour came to an abrupt halt last month when news of the Soviet coup hit the headlines. 2 years' careful preparation and negotiation seemed to have been in vain as the vast country was thrown into turmoil by the takeover by hardline conservatives. But Gorbachev returned to power within 4 days, the show was back on the road, and the Russians are now definitely coming to Southampton's Mayflower Theatre.
Hampshire Chronicle comment this week is read by Daphne and will be followed by First Person, read by Brian. Thank you, Daphne.
The comment is headed, "Extraordinary Civil War at Top of Council." What on earth is going on at Winchester City Council? Our exclusive story today reveals an extraordinary breakdown at the top of the organisation between senior officers and Kim Gottlieb, the city councillor, whose self-funded legal action derailed the Silver Hill scheme and who also opposed the station approach proposals. Departing chief executive Simon Eden has accused him of bullying behaviour and destroying the necessary respect and trust between officers and members through his strong words over the way the council handles such major developments. Council leader Stephen Godfrey said he had to suspend Councillor Gottlieb from the Central Regeneration Group that was tasked with coming up with new ideas for Silver Hill to stop the situation escalating. Councillor Gottlieb says he feels like he is the one being bullied for his stance on Silver Hill, that in effect humiliated the City Council. You almost could not make this up. What next? A punch-up in the corridors? What is this, Lambeth or Islington councils back in the 1980s? But one thing is now absolutely crystal clear. It is imperative that the new chief executive must be appointed from outside this organisation, someone who can come in with no baggage and get this authority back onto some kind of even keel.
And First Person is by Joanna Lewis this week, and it's called "The History Open to All." As we move through the first weeks of September, the familiar sound of autumn can be heard at the start of a slightly chillier morning, parents crying with joy. The return to school means the high tide of late summer holiday bickering has subsided. No more thinking up ever more devious ways to get the little dears outside and off the iPad. No more of those stifling long car journeys stuck in August traffic to visit the seaside or the wildfire park. "Are we nearly there? Give me the Maltesers." And then, "Stop the car, I feel sick." And that was just me after 20 minutes on the M27. For me, the holiday day trip highlight was the Mary Rose exposed exhibition in the Portsmouth, now accessible online. It's a wonderfully enriching experience. It includes an amazing array of personal effects plus lots of ship stuff. Sorry, I'm getting too technical. You begin the journey, the tour, by watching a film in a darkened room of a drowning man. It poignantly recreates what it was like to sink deep into the gloom with flailing arms and muffled cries. You get the same effect if you imagine David Cameron announcing his honours list. The hull was that hidden in the mud for hundreds of years has been so well preserved it would make Madonna cry. Its eerie, silent hull comes back to life temporarily with the clever use of superimposed imagery and sound before darkness returns to its silent, majestic nothingness. Over 400 lives were lost in 1545. The exhibition does them justice. It's the divers and the conservationists who should be honoured. It took 33 years of restoration. However, this weekend, there's no need to jump in the car to chase some secret history for a day of hidden treasure that will educate and stimulate the imagination. Winchester is hosting a superb Heritage Open Day extravaganza this year, September the 8th to the 11th. Many historic buildings are joining National Trust's annual heritage celebration, so we have the chance to sneak a peek at rooms normally hidden, watch craftsmen at work, or have special guided tours, all for free. Whoop! My favourites this year will be seeing parts of the Great Hall not normally accessible. You can meet our fabulous mayor at Abbey House, skip up the staircase to ogle at the first floor interiors of Searle's House, Gar Street. There are men in uniform, free entry to all the military museums. Ariba. I then will be trying to calm down at Wolsey Palace, College Street. One of the highlights for many will be visiting the oldest bookbindery in Britain, P&G Wells Limited, College Street, to watch a craft begun in 1789, Hampshire's answer to Hogwarts. Open access means no matter to your budget or background, you can breathe in the past and walk with our ancestors. This year's rallying cry is about treasuring our local treasures. What building, piece of art, or machinery, or what person, alive or dead, inspires it or moves you? Public sector cuts have stopped. The usual visit to the cells and being fingerprinted at the law courts, for example. The wonderful Hampshire Record Office can't participate either due to budgetary constraints. Nevertheless, over 40 secret histories are on offer. The event had dwindled around six. More cuts loom, so let's show we can value our local heritage. Lord Grossman, patron of Heritage Open Days, kicked off Hampshire's events at the Guildhall this week. He's welcomed cultural value being decided by more people themselves, not academics or experts. With all the profit-centric development plans swilling around and the council planning committee decisions that show contempt for what communities value and the current pressure to solve 30 years of Silver Hill in 30 seconds, the need for the public to hold the line on valuing heritage and historic character has never been greater.
Belgarum's alternative look at the news this week comprises three items, and the first is read by John.
Yes, and Belgarum kicks off with one of his usual rather impenetrable headlines, but things will become clear. Headline: Veruca Salt's tribute to father figure Wilder. He was loved by movie fans across the world, but for one Fourmarks woman, he was also a father figure. As the entertainment world continues to mourn the loss of film star Gene Wilder, a special tribute has been paid by an actress who worked with him on the film for which he will be best remembered. Julie Dawn Cole played spoiled child Veruca Salt in the hit 1971 film Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. The film, which is the movie that Wilder may be most remembered for, brings Roald Dahl's novel to life and follows lovable Charlie, who clinches a golden ticket to gain access to the enchanting factory, On the way, Charlie is joined by other lucky children, including the pampered Veruca Salt, the girl everyone loves to hate. Hollywood actor Wilder, also known for roles in comedy classics such as Young Frankenstein and Blazing Saddles, has been hailed as one of the great talents of his generation. Wilder's nephew said he died at his home in Stamford, Connecticut, having suffered from Alzheimer's disease, the Associated Press reported. Actress Cole said that she and the other Willy Wonka kids, the actors who played the children in the film, had received a message from Wilder about a year or so ago in which he sent lots of love. She told the Press Association, "We knew that Gene wasn't in very good health, but he was a very private man, very dignified, so it's not entirely a surprise, but it's still a very, very sad day." Cole, who was 12 when the movie was filmed, said she and her Wonka co-stars kept in touch and still see each other at least once a year. The actress from Four Marks said, "We're all very, very sad. He was very much the father figure of our little family." Remembering Wilder from his Wonka days, Cole said, "I think people think that he'd be kind of crazy and leaping around, but no, he was just quiet, but gently funny and patient. I think that's the thing I admire him for, because when you've got five kids on a movie set, it can't be easy, all bouncing around, especially with all that sugar. And he was very patient. We were never, ever told, 'Please leave Mr. Wilder alone,' or 'Mr. Wilder is off to his trailer.'" She said that Wilder, with those wonderful blue eyes, was great to be around and very generous, adding, he was always keen for other people to have their moment. And really, for somebody who was such a megastar, there was no ego there."
And now another letter with, not a letter, an article with an enigmatic headline, which, as John has already said, will become clear. "It's all kicking off for the Red Stripes at Winchester Cathedral," and Stripes is spelt with a Z at the end instead of an S, which is a clue. "Saints are back in the Europa League, and with that comes matches against some of the continent's best teams, away days to remember, and, of course, a new song by musical sensations, The Red Stripes," with a Z. "Fans shared and chanted the Southampton in Europa tune whilst competing in the competition's qualifying rounds last year. Now the duo are back and have filmed some of their new music video in the grounds at Winchester Cathedral. The city is well known for attracting television and film stars to its streets, but it can now proudly say that it has made it as a cameo in a music video. Duo James Knights and Mark Lawrence joined forces to spur their team on to the final in Stockholm. Last year's video, which surpassed 50,000 views on YouTube, catapulted the pair to stardom with radio interviews, articles, and even making it onto BT Sport. Their new video, Southampton in Europa 2016, includes a number of famous faces, such as Saints legends Matt Letizia and Laurie McMenemy, and television presenter Ed Chamberlain, also a well-known supporter of the club. It is filmed mainly at the club's St Mary's Stadium, but features other landmarks in the city of Southampton. And there are a couple of photographs, a black and white one of the Red Stripes playing blow football, I think, and you can just see Winchester Cathedral over his shoulder. And a second one of the two together leaping up and down and waving their arms outside what looks like the Odeon Cinema in Southampton.
And the third item is Council Chief Executive's parting shot. Simon Eden took leave of Winchester City Council this week with a farewell gift from the Mayor, Jane Rutter, on the steps of the Guildhall. Among the parting gifts for the Chief Executive was a spoof front page of the Hampshire Chronicle, dubbed Chronic, for the occasion. Some observers may be thinking Mr. Dean left a parting gift of his own, but one that wasn't very welcome in some quarters. namely an email castigating the alleged conduct of City Councillor Kim Gottlieb, and you can read about that elsewhere in this edition. And there's a photograph of the mayor presenting the picture of the front page of the Hampshire Chronicle, or Chronic, as they say, to Simon Eden.
Now this week's announcements, and we start with What's On, with several events in and around Winchester. On Wednesday the 14th of September, there's a coffee morning at Hyde Parish Hall in Hyde Street, with refreshments, a raffle and a sales table. On Saturday the 17th of September, in Winchester Cathedral, in Winchester Guildhall, there's a craft and gift market from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And the same day, that's Saturday the 17th, at Winchester Cathedral, there's a lunchtime concert in the Retro Choir from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. On Sunday the 18th of September, the garden at Beer Mill, London Road Whitchurch, will be open from 1:30 p.m. to 5 p.m. and admission is £5. On Monday the 19th of September, in the Winchester Cathedral Undercroft, you can get tea at 3, that's at 3 p.m, where there's a chance to meet friends and talk. On Tuesday the 20th of September at 1 p.m, there's a lunchtime violin concert in Winchester Cathedral. And on Saturday the 24th of September, the Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra, again at the Cathedral, with a concert of works by Debussy, Berlioz, Vaughan Williams, Britten and Elgar. This starts at 7:30 p.m. and you can get further details and book tickets at 01962 857 275. That's 01962 857 275. And on stage at the Chesil Theatre from the 17th to the 24th of September is the play God of Carnage by Yasmina Reza. Performances are at 7:45 p.m. each evening, apart from the Sunday, and there's a matinee at 2:30 p.m. on the 24th of September. The box office for the Chesil Theatre is 0333 666 3366. That's 0333 666 3366. And at the Theatre Royal Winchester, from the 19th to the 21st of September, at 7:30 p.m, with a Wednesday matinee at 1 p.m, is Lady Anna All at Sea, based on a novel by Anthony Trollope. And the box office for the Theatre Royal is 01962 840 440. That's 01962 840 440. Lighting Up Time ends on Friday the 9th of September at 6:32 a.m. and begins at 7:32 p.m. On Wednesday the 14th of September, it ends at 6:39 a.m. and begins at 7:21 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with this recording, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. We now continue with items of general news, and the first item is read by John.
Yes, pressure and cuts causing stress, says the headline. Hundreds of police officers, firefighters and council workers have been signed off with stress-related illnesses. It's been revealed that 277 members of staff at Hampshire Constabulary were signed off due to stress-related illness in 2015-16, alongside 29 staff at the fire service. And at Hampshire's councils, the numbers of workers signed off due to stress-related illness rose at councils in Southampton, Eastleigh and the New Forest, but have remained steady for Winchester. Figures obtained by the Chronicle following a Freedom of Information Act request show that 7,864 days were missed by staff at Hampshire Constabulary last year as a result of stress, with 277 officers and civilian staff signed off. One member of staff alone was signed off for a total of 254 days as a result of stress or a stress-related illness. with the general figures including conditions such as anxiety and stress, post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, and work-related stress or depression. The constabulary said figures for previous years were recorded in a different way and so couldn't be compared to those from last year. Reacting to the figures, Hampshire Police Federation official John Apter said, "The pressure placed on officers in Hampshire was often intolerable." He said the loss of almost 1,000 officers in the county had increased the demand on those left behind, but said that there's now more understanding of the impact of mental health illness. He added, "Hampshire Constabulary has recently unveiled a wellbeing strategy, which puts in place more effective support for these types of issues. This must be a genuine attempt to support officers and not just a tick box exercise. Police officers are not robots. They're human beings who, despite their training, are not immune from this hidden and destructive illness. More must be done to support them. Much more."
And now, barracks escape MOD sale. But Sir John Moore site in Winchester remains on Ministry's review list. The Ministry of Defence has announced plans to sell 13 sites across the country to build 17,000 homes and raise £225 million. But Sir John Moore Barracks is not on the list. The announcement on Tuesday included the sale of two sites in Hampshire, the Royal Military Police Headquarters and the Defence School of Policing and Guarding at Southwark Park near Fareham and Amport House in Andover. The MOD says there will be further announcements this year, which may include an announcement on Winchester's Sir John Moore Barracks. As reported in the Chronicle, City Council leader Stephen Godfrey said he will resist any attempt to sell off the 86-hectare site for housing. He is hopeful that the MOD have listened. Councillor Godfrey said, "It has not been removed from the review list and there will be announcements across the year. We were told that there was a significant chance that it would be announced early in the year as a closure. We took steps along with other agencies to make the Minister of State aware of the complexities of developing on the Flowerdown Barracks, and I am sure that at the very least the information has been used to revise their plans." The sales form part of a programme of defence estate rationalisation announced in last year's spending review and is expected to deliver £1 billion in revenue while creating space for 55,000 homes. A spokesman for the MOD said, "Work on the wider estate optimisation strategy continues. However, no decisions about the future of other individual sites have been made at this point. The MOD expects to announce further details of the estate optimisation strategy later in the year."
Detective story is truly great. It's a fascinating detective story stemming from the destruction of one of England's most treasured churches, the final resting place of King Alfred the Great. The tale involves global power politics, criminal destruction, possible fraud and theft, and unlikely rebirth, and all encompassed in medieval timber now found in the Winchester offices of Adam Architecture. A Winchester history group has pieced together what happened to material from Hyde Abbey, the huge monastery destroyed in the 1530s. Hyde 900 believe they've proved that wood from the abbey was not burned as previously supposed, but instead later used as construction of roof of a nearby building now known as Old Hyde House, also St Bartholomew's Church in Hyde, and possibly the church in Micheldever. Hyde 900 would like other householders of historical houses in the area to look at their timber to see if it might be from Hyde Abbey. David Spurling of Hyde 900 has had the Adam timbers analysed and through historical records traced what happened. He believed the timber is from between 1266 to 1298 and may have come from one of the huge abbey's subsidiary buildings, such as the abbot's lodging or guest house, but probably not the church itself. People have long suspected that materials from the abbey were recycled, but this is the first time it's been proved. Hyde 900 commissioned dendrodating expert Dr. Andy Moyer, who said, "As four of the reused samples appear to derive from a seven-canted roof, a roof type almost invariably found in ecclesiastical buildings, it seems almost likely that the timbers came from the adjacent Hyde Abbey site." Mr. Spurling said, "This is a really important step in gaining a better understanding of what the abbey looked like and how it was constructed. Although it was the first built in the early 12th century, at the final burying place of King Alfred the Great, it was renewed and refurbished on several occasions due to fire and wear and tear. Our discovery suggests that one of the most important renewals was in the second half of the 13th century, when this complex and sophisticated seven-canted roof was constructed." Mr. Spurling added, "We couldn't have done this without Adam Architecture, not only allowing us to clamber around through the research sponsorship." Paul Hanvey, Adam Architectural Technical Director, said, "It was of great interest and surprise when we received confirmation from the local heritage group, Hyde 900, that we had such important timber in the roof. The practice has a keen interest in the restoration of listed and heritage buildings, so the Grade 2 and 2 starred buildings owned by Winchester City Council, now known as Old Hyde House, was an obvious choice for our new head office. During the careful restoration and refurbishment in 2012, we became aware the building contained stones from Hyde Abbey, but we didn't know about the timber. In a parallel development, a beam in the nearby tower of St. Bartholomew's Church, Hyde, has also been tied to the same 13th century seven-canted roof, set along with the beam dated in the 1590s. What this demonstrates is that St. Bart's Tower was almost certainly constructed towards the end of Queen Elizabeth I's reign," said Mr. Spurling. "This helpfully clears up a long debate about the age of the tower, which was also built mostly from Hyde Abbey stone."
And this is not so much a headline as a tongue twister, so here goes. Bid to give Covert an overt revamp. New life will be brought to a well-known part of Winchester High Street. St. Morris's Covert will be given a makeover thanks to Winchester Town Forum, who have come up with the idea to improve its presentation and the area around it. The Covert is a covered passageway that links the High Street with the Wessex Hotel, Winchester Cathedral and the public toilets in Market Lane. It's been frequently criticised for its poor lighting, commercial bins and a lack of linking and interpretation of its historical past. But now, designers from Scott Whitby Studio in London have won the contract to produce a new design scheme. Over the summer months, they've gathered information to help shape their proposals. This has included interviews with people in the town centre, studying CCTV footage of pedestrian patterns and inviting council officers and other stakeholders to contribute their professional opinions. They've also conducted practical tests to see whether improvements can be made. These practical tests have included moving the flower stall to the centre of the covert and filling the space with a pop-up coffee shop. I know, do we need more coffee shops? Good question. Continuing. Chairman of Winchester Town Forum, Councillor Anne Weir, said, "Forum members have been very impressed by the thorough and thoughtful approach of the Scott Whitby Studio team. Right from the start, they've been really keen to talk to as many people as possible. They believe that this space in the middle of our city deserves a proper place in Winchester's distinguished street scene. The designers have really got to grips with the many issues that beset the covert and have been proactive in testing out the right way to deal with these. And there's going to be an exhibition of their plans at Winchester Tourist Information Centre until September the 25th. And on September the 21st, the studio team will present their plan at Winchester Town Forum from 6:30 p.m.
Rebel governors at an under-fire Hampshire Health Trust are demanding that more heads roll following beleaguered Chief Executive Katrina Percy's decision to step down. As previously reported, Miss Percy quit her post at Southern Health NHS Foundation Trust following a series of scandals over the organisation's failure to investigate the deaths of hundreds of people with disabilities and mental health problems. But the Calmore-based trust decision to keep her on in an advisory role and retain a £245,000 annual salary has sparked outrage among health chiefs and grieving families, despite trust bosses claiming she is ideally suited for the position. A group of five rebel governors now want to remove Trust Medical Director Dr. Leslie Stevens, Chief Operating Officer Dr. Chris Gordon, and non-executive directors Trevor Spires and Malcolm Berryman. The rebels are hoping to reschedule an extraordinary Council of Governors meeting to consider a vote of no confidence in the leadership, but need one more governor to support the bid. Trust Interim Chairman Tim Smart postponed the meeting in May, saying the decisions made would not be legally binding. Public Governor Peter Bell, who is leading the rebels, said, "Katrina wasn't the only person at fault, as it was up to the board collectively." A trust spokeswoman said, "At this time, there is not enough support among the majority of governors for an extraordinary Council of Governors meeting, and the trust therefore has no plans to schedule one." She said she was unable to comment on calls for the four board members to go. A Care Quality Commission report accused the trust of serious failings in not investigating hundreds of deaths. Of the 10,306 deaths between April 2011 and March 2015, 722 were categorised as unexpected and only 272 were investigated.
Open day for Arts Festival. Hampshire's newest major arts festival is opening its doors to the public next weekend. The Grange Festival is taking over Northington Grange near Alsford with its first season next year. It replaces Grange Park Opera, which has moved to Surrey after nearly 20 years. Now that GPO's last season is over, the Grange Festival can assume their full tenacity and prepare for the first season in June 2017. To raise its profile, it's holding an open day on Sunday, September the 18th. There will be live music, guided tours, Alan Titchmarsh in conversation with director Michael Chance, and some of the key players, as well as food and drink from well-known suppliers. There is no need to dress up. Bring family and friends for an entertaining and relaxed afternoon. Mr. Chance said, "It's about celebrating the place for the people who live nearby, who may have volunteered over the years. We have 600 people saying they want to turn up on the day. We have a huge opportunity to build on what has been going on for 18 years very successfully and to modernise the facilities and have slightly more wide-ranging artistic vision. To attend, you should register interest by sending an email to events@thegrangefestival.co.uk. The programme, 12:30 p.m, the Grange opens to visitors, stalls open for business. 1:30 p.m, Alan Titchmarsh interviews Michael Chance about the Grange Festival and the 2017 season in the Marquee. 2 p.m, Richard Pinkstone, tenor, and Nia Coleman, soprano, sing arias and duets with orchestral backing in the Marquee. 2:20 p.m, Michael Chance talks to John Copley about his extraordinary long and illustrious career as opera director in the Marquee. 2:50 p.m, break. 2 p.m. and 3 p.m, tours of the house with Mark Baring, son of the owner, Lord Ashburton. 3 p.m, falconry demonstration. 3:30 p.m. cookery demonstration. 4:15 p.m. live opera on the portico, Dido and Aeneas by Henry Purcell, performed by students from the Royal Academy of Music. And there are three photographs, one very good one of Northington Grange, the neoclassical mansion near Alresford, another one showing the columns very clearly as people gather in the front of the house and enjoying a performance of the Grange, pictures of people smiling and laughing happily.
Fury over three-day fire alarm. The Driver and Vehicle Standards Agency has apologised after a fire alarm at its Winchester premises rang continuously for more than 3 days. People in the Christchurch Road area endured three nights of constant noise pollution after the alarm at the DVSA premises malfunctioned on the Friday of the bank holiday weekend. It rang and rang through Saturday, Sunday and Monday. Susan Rolling, a nearby resident, told how she made several attempts to stop the noise. She rang the police and fire service, but they had no record of any key holder. She rang City Council Environmental Health to find there was no one working there at the weekend. She rang the out-of-hours City Council maintenance line, but heard nothing, and so rang the alarm company. But they no longer have a contract with the DVSA, and so could do nothing. She sent an email to the DVSA asking them to get in touch with anyone who worked in Winchester. They acknowledged receipt of the message and said they would do their best, but nothing happened. She rang City Councillor Fiona Mather, but she said she could do nothing about it. Eventually, the fire service attended and established that it was a fire alarm making the noise, but they couldn't find a heat source and had no key holder to contact, so they left without taking any further action. Mrs. Rolling said, "I had guests, and they left a day early because they couldn't sleep. We're all absolutely livid." A DVSA spokesman said, "We'd like to apologise for any inconvenience caused."
Oh, that's all right, then. £35,000 repairs appeal for unique city church. A unique medieval Hampshire church is aiming to raise a five-figure sum for roof repairs. The 13th century St Swithin-upon-Kingsgate in Winchester is the only church above a gateway in the country, but needs £35,000 for crucial work. Churchwarden Christine Pilgrim said, "As far as we are aware, the church is probably the only living church above an archway left in the country." Fundraising is starting this month to plug a £35,000 shortfall in the cost of £65,000. The effort will include the chance to buy a tile for £10 when the tiles are being put back up in the latter part of October. Mrs. Pilgrim said a tile can be dedicated to a loved one or to mark a special occasion. To buy a tile, contact St Lawrence Parish Office, Colebrook Street, Winchester, or call 01962 849434. And there's a photograph of this lovely little church above the archway with several people looking up at it.
Orchestra wins praise. A youth orchestra has been praised by the Foreign and Commonwealth Office, the FCO, for its outstanding concert in Budapest as part of a summer tour. Members of the Hampshire County Youth Orchestra took part in an FCO tour of Hungary organised by Hampshire County Council's Music Service. The FCO's Deputy Head of Mission in Budapest, Caitlin Jones, said, "The audience was blown away. I wish I'd known how good they were going to be." Councillor Peter Edgar, HCC's Executive Member for Education, added, "Our County Youth Orchestra is well known locally for its high standard of music and thoroughly enjoyable performances, so I'm not surprised they've won this high praise internationally on their tour of Hungary. I'm very glad that the audience in Budapest enjoyed the performance so much." The orchestra's international tours offer a major opportunity for young people to broaden their horizons, develop confidence and celebrate the way music can bring to different nations together. It's an invaluable experience that I'm pleased that we are able to offer it in so many young musicians. Hampshire County Youth Orchestra is a full symphony orchestra with around 100 of the county's most experienced young players aged between 11 and 19 from Hampshire schools.
New roof for rink to stop rain issues. It was likened to a swimming pool last Christmas as skaters slipped on melting ice. But now Winchester Cathedral will be installing a roof on its rink so that skaters can hit the rink without their wellies. Organisers say the new clear span roof to be built in October will provide a rain-free skating experience as part of its 10th anniversary. One of those backing the new design is Winchester Bid, who say it will boost the already successful rink and market. Bid Executive Director Catherine Tenness said, "I think it's a very good move by the cathedral. I was a little concerned when I first heard the plans, as I thought the roof might be covered. But now that we know it's clear, it's going to be a very good thing to have." As we reported last year, the state of the ice rink left families furious. The ice melted following rain and mild temperatures of an unseasonal 15 degrees centigrade. But despite a clearly visible layer of water on top of the ice, it was kept open. Asked if last year's issue will have put off potential punters, Ms. Turness added, "I don't think so. The cathedral said afterwards that it had had more people last year than ever before." Organisers say the new structure will keep skaters dry in the rain while still being able to enjoy views of the cathedral and the clear winter skies above. Event organiser Philip Holroyd-Smith said, "The roof will cover the rink and extend over the walkways, enabling us to offer skaters and spectators a rain-free experience. We've gone for a clear roof this time so that the rink's unique location is celebrated by the stunning cathedral backdrop. The sides of the rink will remain fully open so the festive sights, sounds and smells of the Christmas market that surround the rink can be enjoyed by everyone." And the ice rink opens on November the 18th. There's some lovely pictures here. There's an artist's impression of what the roof will look like from the rink itself. And yes, you can. You get a beautiful view of the cathedral lit up with the winter sky above. And also you've got some of those distinctively red-coated quiristers having a ride on the rink last year.
Blaze cars still at Boomtown. 30 cars, wrecked by a huge blaze at Boomtown, are still on site, despite the fire happening nearly a month ago. The organisers of Boomtown said the reason the cars are still on site, on land off Telegraph Hill, is due to the ongoing insurance issues following the fire. Currently, the clear-up of the site is still going on, although very nearly completed. Matterley estate landowner Peveril Bruce, speaking last week, said, "Boomtown have not vacated the site yet. They are still doing their clean-up. They are dealing with the cars and there are still some out there. I would very much hope that it goes ahead next year. It was a fantastic event, the event itself. They hope to complete the clean-up by the end of this week, so that would be 3 weeks. They have done incredibly well." A spokeswoman for Boomtown said, "The cars are still there because some people still need to arrange for their insurers to come and pick them up. There are still people on site doing the clear-up anyway." The fire on August the 12th saw firefighters from across Hampshire battle to contain the flames, which nearly threatened to engulf a nearby campsite. Officer in command, Watch Manager Mark Compton from Winchester Fire Station, said that it was the actions of just 4 firefighters, the first on scene, who managed to stop the flames spreading to nearby tents in the luxury Boomtique camping site. The Boomtown spokeswoman said that despite the fire and also the tragic death of 18-year-old Olivia Christopher, who was found dead in a tent on the Monday after the event, that they still plan on holding Boomtown next year. As reported in the Chronicle, A report by Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service concluded that the most likely cause of the blaze at Boomtown Fair was a discarded cigarette. A spokesman for the fire service said, "It looks as if a lit cigarette was left unattended near the parked vehicles, and supported by the dry grass, it quickly spread." In June, Boomtown won permission to increase its capacity from 50,000 to 60,000, and Mr. Bruce got planning permission to stage the events until the end of 2019, instead of relying on permitted development rights. This year's event sold out, with an extra 8,500 tickets sold. The £60,000 figure included staff as well as revellers. The licensing committee heard that Boomtown has grown in 8 years from being organised on a kitchen table to having 26 permanent employees, with 11,600 working at the event itself, including 700 on security. This year's event was marred by traffic gridlock in parts of Winchester on the Monday.
This is following up one of the letters we had earlier, and it's entitled "Looking Back at Another Life." 40 years and 10, Kingsworthy Jubilee. The experience of being a child in the 1920s or a young adult in Second World War belongs to a different world from the one most of us know today. 40 years and 10 brings the world vividly to life. Co-produced by Hat Fair and Flintlock Theatre and commissioned by Winchester City Council, it tells life stories of six of the city's oldest residents. Although each had a unique story to tell, theirs are not the lives of people who have lived in the public eye and changed the world, like Royal 90-year-old whose birthday this play marked. These are ordinary lives made extraordinary by sheer longevity. Writer Anna Glynn took each 90-year-old's words verbatim and cleverly interweaved their stories into a fast-moving and funny and at times riveting chronicle of the 20th century life. Robin Collier's direction was just as inspired. We were seated at long tables with tea and cakes, underlining that these elderly people are just like us. The actors sat among us, standing to speak. Leonie Spilsbury, Sophie Colson, Nicholas Waters, Charlie Richards, Morgan Philpott and Helena Johnson were the actors. Despite being a third of the age of their subjects, they did a brilliant job of conveying the characters and cadences of these marvellous 90-year-olds. 40 years and 10 is an uplifting show in an age when the elderly are marginalised from families and society. These people's fascinating memories, strong personalities, and even their trenchant thoughts on today's world are a forceful reminder that to be elderly is not to be less of a person. Photograph of the cast of the show.
New star in fundraiser. Alsford TV presenter Alistair Stewart will be answering some questions in a fundraising event later this month. Mr. Stewart joined Southern TV as a reporter in 1976 before moving to ITN in 1980 as industrial correspondent and then as a presenter of the main bulletins. He also reported live from the fall of the Berlin Wall, spent a year as ITN's Washington correspondent, covered the Gulf War from Saudi Arabia, becoming the first British TV reporter to broadcast live from the liberated Kuwait City. Mr. Stewart, who lives in Bramdean, has provided live commentaries for state visits, royal weddings, elections, and he moderated the first leaders' debate in 2010 at the general election between Gordon Brown, David Cameron, and Nick Clegg. He's going to reveal the stories behind these events in conversation with fellow broadcaster John Miller in Bishop Sutton Village Hall on Friday, September the 30th at 7 p.m. Proceeds will go to the Village Church Vestry Fund. Tickets are £10, and if you're interested, you can contact Lynette Jolly on 01962 733 540. That's Lynette on Winchester 733 540.
And now another item about another well-known TV personality, and it's headed Act Swift to See Gardner. TV presenter and gardener Joe Swift is coming to Winchester. As part of his UK tour, he will be stopping off at the Theatre Royal on Friday, September the 16th. Join him as he digs deep to reveal his fascinating journey from his rock and roll youth to becoming one of the country's top garden designers. Joe will share all this with you and take questions on his life and career. The presenter comes from a family of actors and writers. His dad is Clive Swift, who played the browbeaten husband in BBC sitcom Keeping Up Appearances, while his mother is acclaimed novelist Margaret Drabble. Joe's TV credits include Gardener's World, RHS Flower Shows at Chelsea, Hampton Court, Tatton Park and Malvern, Small Town Gardens and the Great Chelsea Garden Challenge, amongst others. He writes a weekly column for The Times and a monthly one for Gardener's World magazine. He has appeared on Celebrity MasterChef, Chef and Celebrity Bake Off. Buy tickets for the show at the Theatre Royal, Winchester.
Leopard cubs take first steps outside. Twin Amur leopard cubs took their first steps outside at Marvel Zoo. At just 2 months old, the male cubs were allowed out into their enclosure. They're playing a key part in preserving their species, as the Amur leopard is the world's most endangered big cat, with fewer than 70 remaining in the wild in Russia and China. The cubs were born to mum Kaya on the 25th of June and are now fully vaccinated so they can safely venture outside. The pair have not yet been named. Zoo staff will name one, but the public will get a chance to name the other one next month. The cubs are an important addition to the European Endangered Species Breeding Programme, EEP, to preserve critical genetic diversity. Amurs are at a serious risk, and maintaining a healthy captive population is crucial to their conservation. The wild population has been declining over many decades due to pressure from humans. Habitat loss and hunting of both the leopards themselves as well as their prey species has played a major role. Dr. Philip Reardon, Marble's head of conservation biology, has been working with the colleagues in China to develop positive actions for the species, he said. Thanks to the efforts of colleagues in Beijing Forestry University's Wildlife Institute, the Amur leopard has now been highlighted as a priority and it is receiving vital support from Chinese central government. The birth of the leopards follows that of tiger cubs at the zoo earlier this summer, and there's an absolutely gorgeous photograph of the two leopard cubs with lovely blue eyes and peeking out from behind their cub, getting into their enclosure, presumably. And it says, two Amur leopard cubs venture outside for the first time. Can't get over their blue eyes.
And here's some good news for local primary school pupils. Mayor plans awards for top school pupils. New awards are to be given to primary school pupils in the Hampshire district. The Mayor's Awards for Schools will see a pair of awards presented to pupils chosen by their head teacher each time the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Jane Rutter, visits a primary school in the Winchester district. One award will recognise the child who's made the most progress in the past term in any area of endeavour, such as academic progress, music, sport, or something as simple as attendance or behaviour. The second award will recognise a child who's been a consistently good performer, again, in any area of school life that head teacher deems appropriate. Each award will consist of a pin badge and a certificate, plus a book token to the value of £20. The Mayor's Awards for Schools scheme will be launched in September, and Councillor Rutter is keen to visit as many schools as possible before the end of her mayoral term in May 2017. She said, "I'm very excited to be launching this new initiative, and to make a visit from the Mayor to one of our local primary schools even more special. I hope that head teachers will see the Mayor's Awards for Schools as a way to recognise special children in their schools. I want to see effort recognised in whatever field with an award from the Mayor. Likewise, I want to see a pupil who's knuckled down and worked consistently well, whether it be in the academic arena or something else, recognised as well. And I look forward to presenting many Mayor's Awards in schools over the coming months. And that's accompanied by a lovely picture of the Mayor with a big beaming smile on her face, meeting pupils from King School in Winchester.
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Jane Thomas and Valerie Lilly, and thank you to our copying and dispatch and studio preparation teams. Particular thanks to our readers, John Regan.
Bye-bye.
Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
And Brian Woodruff.
Goodbye.
And from me, Tom Williams, goodbye, and do enjoy the week ahead. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label in the wallet, please try to ensure that the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside the wallet. Thank you.